Mac Sherry. Weekends from 9 on 2FM.
I am joined by our beloved Ellen Coyne. She is news correspondent in Independent News and she is looking fabulous today.
Thank you very much. I'm oot in a boot for the first time in many, many weeks and going for a very precious nail appointment after this. So I actually got dressed properly for the first time in a very long time.
I'm truly so happy for you. I really am. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. We have a lot to talk about because it was a big week. And I think a lot of people were really kind of hit hard by the news that our chief medical officer, Dr. Tony Holohan, was stepping down.
Yeah, this took a lot of people by surprise. Basically, after the daily briefings that we've gotten so used to, on Thursday, he made an announcement at the end that he's stepping back from the role of chief medical officer. His wife, Emer, has had a form of blood cancer since 2012. And unfortunately, this time last week, Emer went into palliative care. So for obvious reasons, Tony Holohan has decided to spend more time with his family, including his two children, Clodagh and Ronan. Dr. Ronan Glynn, who's kind of been at his side throughout all of this, who people probably recognise, is going to take his place as chief medical officer. But I think when this announcement came out on Thursday, I couldn't really imagine that there wasn't a person in Ireland who didn't feel very deeply affected by it, because throughout this, Tony Holohan has kind of been a presence in everybody's home. And I heard the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar kind of saying, as part of the kind of flood of tributes paid to him at the end of the week, that it was actually the calm demeanour and the patience that Dr. Tony Holohan had that really helped a lot of people through. And I think we can all appreciate now that those evenings spent patiently answering very long and protracted questions that all of us had were spent at a time when he was going through a lot of deep kind of personal pain at home. So with that knowledge, it just completely changes how much he did for the country over the past few weeks. And I saw quite a few politicians and people in the public eye describing him as basically a true patriot.
Yeah, well, I think we all just trust him. Don't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there is just something about him that is very trustworthy, and you feel like he's telling you the truth, and that's exactly what you need at a time when everybody's a little bit scared, or a lot scared.
Exactly, and I think if you compare to chief medical officers in the UK, like there was some controversy around the CMO in Scotland and in England because they were, you know, breaking rules and telling people to follow rules and then not following themselves. And I think we've been very lucky in Ireland that the kind of team that we've had leading us, certainly from the public health perspective, whatever you want to say about the politics perspective, have been very robust and very transparent. And I think that at times when people did have difficult questions, like, you know, during the week, there was a lot of kind of controversy about the travel rules. The CMO has always been very forthcoming and always has been very open to answering questions. And I think, as you said, the kind of importance of that, like the social capital associated with that when you're trying to bring people with you, can't really be estimated. And I think that everyone in the country owes him a debt of gratitude for everything that he's done.
100%. When I said it, I saw it on my phone and I said to my husband during the week, and he said, and he's been wasting his time on us.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, the feeling of, like, you know, this time that he has with his family is so valuable. And I know there will be thousands of people across the country who have been in the same position that he's in, or who have experienced cancer firsthand, who know how valuable that time is. And yeah, we just owe him such a debt of gratitude. And I really hope that he has felt this week the outpouring of love and appreciation that the country has really demonstrated toward him. I think it's been quite moving to see, and I hope that he can kind of take that and convert that into some kind of peace or strength as he goes through this, what is going to be an incredibly difficult time. Unfortunately, we have to now move into something less pleasant, because there was some controversy this week about a funeral.
Yes. So Bobby Storey, who was a former member of the IRA and then, after he left prison, went on to be involved in Sinn Féin, passed away, I think, on the 21st of June at the age of 64. And obviously he was a very prominent person within Sinn Féin. Mary Lou McDonald, the leader, had described him as, you know, a great Republican. And his funeral took place on Tuesday in Belfast. And I think a lot of people will have been aware of this funeral because of the pictures that came out afterwards. So basically, as we know, attendance at funerals themselves are obviously limited limited because of COVID-19. But what happened was there was basically hundreds of people lining the street as the funeral passed. And it was very obvious from these images that those people were not social distancing. And because of Mr. Storey's involvement in the Republican movement, a lot of senior members of Sinn Féin were there. So Michelle O'Neill was there, Mary Lou MacDonald was there, Piers Doherty was there, and they attended the funeral and kind of maintained that at the funeral they'd maintained social distancing, they were wearing masks, but obviously they were criticised because nobody likes seeing pictures of crowds of people together for obvious reasons. What happened after that was when Michelle O'Neill was asked to kind of defend herself and her attendance, she kind of made the point that, and so did Mary Lou, that, you know, attending a funeral is very important and it's very important to say goodbye to friends properly. And for obvious reasons, this was hugely galling, particularly to all of the people who've had to watch funerals on Facebook live streams over the past few months or haven't been able to attend at all. And there was kind of a sense of, you know, is there like a hierarchy of mourning where some people's mourning is more important than others? And following that, both of them then had to issue another apology and another clarification that, of course, their hearts went out to other people who had missed out on funerals. So I think it just left a really bad taste in people's mouths. And also in Northern Ireland, there was a lot of calls for Michelle O'Neill to actually resign, and she was coming under a lot of pressure. She's maintained that she's going to stay in her role.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will have watched this week as well the Primetime Investigates programme, which was over two nights looking at COVID-19. The first night in particular was incredibly powerful. It was set in the COVID specialist intensive care unit in St. James's Hospital. And I think it really brought home to a lot of people the real impact of this, people who haven't necessarily been affected by it in their immediate family or maybe perhaps no one they know experienced COVID or at a serious level. I think a lot of people really saw the sacrifice that people have made where they haven't been able to be with their loved ones as they've died, and the people who are having to live with the pain of knowing that their loved one died alone and who weren't able to grieve or go through that experience in the normal way. And I can completely understand, even just having watched that, why people would be infuriated over that. Now we have to stay with COVID, unfortunately, because there is more controversy around the nursing homes.
Yes. So one of the many kind of knock-on negative effects of COVID-19 was at the start, home help had to be kind of drawn back. So maybe people listening to this might remember home help for maybe if they have grandparents who might need carers to come in, or it possibly affects people with different kinds of disabilities who basically need some assistance to live in their own home. Mm. At the start, the HSE was trying to move resources around and a lot of people were told that their home care was being withdrawn. Mm. So I did quite a distressing story in March about a lady called Joanne Mulligan, who's 47 and has MS. She's from New Zealand, so she doesn't have any other family in Ireland. So when her home care was being withdrawn, she didn't have a lot of options, and the HSE actually put her in a nursing home. And she spent 8 weeks there, obviously at the height of COVID-19. And we know that nursing homes were some of the worst affected residential care settings. And she was staying there while people were unfortunately passing away from COVID-19 around her, which was so terrifying that she basically spent all of her time in her
room,
as anybody would. So after that story, I wanted to find out, has this happened to other people? So I put in a Freedom of Information request to the HSE, and we got it back this week. And basically the only information that they could give us was for the people who were discharged from acute hospitals at the height of COVID-19. So we'll say like March, April, May, who didn't have home help available. So who were then the HSE paid to put them into nursing homes. There were seven people who were in that situation. And of those seven people, three of them are actually still in nursing homes. So these are people who in an ideal world should be back in their own homes with carers coming in a couple of times a day. But unfortunately, one of the consequences of COVID is home care workers are frontline healthcare workers. So a lot of them got sick. A lot of them, maybe for personal reasons, also decided to not show up to work. So resources were very scarce. And I think it's just, you know, everyone appreciates the resource issue, but I think it's very distressing for people to have their loved ones go into what unfortunately became one of the most dangerous settings in the country for COVID-19 when they shouldn't have been there at all.
Absolutely. We have a little clip of Julia Thurman, who was one of the people who was in a nursing home and fortunately was able to leave that nursing home and move into her own place this week.
When I got the keys, I cried. And I'm even going to start crying now saying this to you. No, it was a big moment. Because I made friends with the girls inside over 12 years. Can you imagine that a handful that were there as long as me? and also the elation of finally being able to live a more normal life.
I mean, I can't imagine being a young person. Like, even I have a family member who is like, she is an elderly woman, but she is so sharp. Like, her mind, she would buy and sell you like no problem. And even for her, it's difficult sometimes to be in a nursing home because maybe other people's mental capacity isn't up to hers. And that can be very demoralizing. If you're a young person, I mean...
Yeah, and like you can see from Julia's story came out during the week, and that was, you know, she was advocating to get into her own accommodation for 12 years. And something that any of the kind of disability rights organisations can tell you is that what's unfortunate about this, and it was the same with Joanne, is sometimes people can only get out once they actually take on the burden of being an advocate for themselves. So agitating and kind of advocating to try to get out into appropriate accommodation. And the core part of this problem, I think, is the fact that we don't really have enough appropriate accommodation for adults with physical disabilities who require maybe homes that have that are a little bit more accessible, that have been adjusted for people who want to live independently. So as Joanne said, she basically thinks that because she has a physical disability, MS, she was basically popped into a nursing home because there was nowhere else to put her. Yeah. So this is a much broader issue. It's an issue all the time, not just when there's a pandemic. But yeah. I think that COVID-19 has kind of brought out some of the most dangerous aspects of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's talk about... the US attorney who is welcoming a statement from Prince Andrew over this week's arrest.
Yes.
Give us the lowdown on this.
So basically, people will remember the disgraced former billionaire Jeffrey Epstein was
disgraced
arrested.
Former billionaire. What I a mean, phrase. What,
like, that's quite the title to have on your
really
Wikipedia
is.
Page. He was arrested last year on charges relating to possible trafficking and abuse of minors. A lot of young women came forward with stories. He was arrested and then died by suicide, I think, last August, but the investigation went on. And a lot of his victims who had given interviews had named Ghislaine Maxwell, who is this socialite who was also an ex of Jeffrey Epstein. And the survivors had basically said that she had been responsible for introducing Epstein to very young girls, including someone as young as 14. So the FBI had been looking for her for a long time. And I think someone described it during the week as her having kind of slunk away to this mansion in New Hampshire. So she was arrested during the week to a lot of people's joy, I think. And following the arrest, Prince Andrew was once again hurtled into the spotlight. Fortunately, we know he doesn't sweat, so I don't think he was actually able to sweat about it, but a normal person would have. But the US authorities were saying in the press conference for Maxwell's arrest that they would be very keen to talk to Prince Andrew because they believe that he could have some very pertinent information for the investigation. But what happened then was basically this ongoing spat where Prince Andrew's lawyers are kind of creating the impression that he's like super eager to help and like is available for an interview anytime. But the US authorities are saying that's not quite true. They've asked to speak to him a number of times and he has not made himself available. And the same solicitors or lawyers for Prince Andrew who were saying he's like super eager once he turned around to the FBI and were like, no chance.
Absolutely not. Yeah. It's such a horror show. That
it's
whole
horrific.
Situation is awful. There's no good in that at all. Although it's always good to see an arrest, I suppose.
100%.
Thank you so much, Ellen Coyne. How dare I? I cannot believe it. News correspondent, Independent News. How did I hesitate on that? Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy getting your nails done.